We start with the last two words on Samach Vav Amudbet, continuing with Rav Nachman. Before the Gemara discussed at the end of yesterday's daf, Rav Nachman's position with regards to whether mechila b'taul have a mechila, whether mechila by accident is classified as mechila. So on that, Amar Rava. Rava says, "Habi yativna kamei to Rav Nachman." I was sitting in front of Rav Nachman when he made this statement about the payroll dekel. The statement that he made about the payroll dekel was the ishamit v'achil b'mufkin and minei, that if he takes them, even though he's not entitled to take the fruit, if he does take the fruit, then we do not remove him from his possession, which from what we saw indicated that Nachman believes mechila b'taut havi mechila, it is mechila. So I wanted to ask him from Ona v'udik, and he jumped the gun, and he saw that I was ready to challenge him from Ona, and chazitan ailonit, and he wanted to show me from ailonit that his position was correct. By Onah, we see that there is mechila b'taut. There's mechila by accident, and that's not classified as a mechila. Vodik chazit and ailonit, and he went ahead and responded or preempted my question by showing me from ailonit, because hari ailonit de mechila b'tauti. By ailonit there is mechila b'taut, v'havya mechila, and it is mechila. It's not. So let's explain what does it mean. Hamam enet v'ashnia v'ilunit. So these three women who are married, right? Amima enet is a tano whose father passed away, and she no longer could be, or she was already married once, and her father no longer has jurisdiction over her. That wants to get married. She can't get married midoraisa because she's a tano, and nobody has jurisdiction over her to marry off because. From the Torah. So the Rabbanan empowered her mother and her brother for her to have Kiddushim di Rabbanan, so she wouldn't be Shalona Yaguban min hakefke. So she shouldn't just be left out to the wild. So therefore, they instituted Kiddushim di Rabbanan. Now this Kiddushim di Rabbanan does not require a get to be removed, but rather requires miyun. Silha mima enet. A young girl, a ketana, who was married mid Rabbanan, who then rejects, right, or in a sense annuls her marriage. Ve'ashnia, the shnia here is referring to also a dirabanan din, which is arayot dirabanan. These aren't the core arayot midoraisa, but rather shnia. Shniot le'arayot, or secondary arayot, are only asurim midorabanan. Vayelunit, right, an ayelunit is a woman who is unable to give birth, but unable to give birth because she doesn't even have the apparatus with which to have a baby. And that's why she's called an ayil from the male form. So all of these three individuals, in them lo ktuba, velo perot, velo mizonot, velo blaot. These individuals, when they get divorced, they do not get, they're not entitled to ktuba, they're not entitled to perot, which is, according to Rashi, the perot are the perot that were consumed by the baal, velo mizonot. They're not entitled to be fed or given mizonot from their husband. Tosus here discusses what exactly the chiddush is. Of course, they're not entitled to mizonot. I mean, they're divorced now. So what type of entitlement they have from mizonot? Tosus talks about the situation that we discussed in other places where they borrowed money for their mizonot and they want to get paid back or have that be paid back by their ex-husband. Velo blaot. Blaot, again, Rashi over here explains blaot are clothing or coats that were brought into the marriage that were worn down by the husband, so that which is left over, right, is not returned to the wife. Tosfos takes issue with his explanation of a blowout, because we're only talking about nechsein blowout, not nechsein tzon barzel, and all of these items that relate to the ktubah or entitlements of the ktubah, that even though when she brought them into the marriage, she should really be entitled to their return at the time of the divorce. Nevertheless, the Chachamim said, no, there were kones in these instances. Well, it depends on the instance, but there were kones in these instances. We discussed this before by Ketana, that they instituted it wouldn't be returned, otherwise the husband would not be encouraged to marry ever because she could just walk out, and then all this would disappear, so he wouldn't invest in the fields, he wouldn't do what was the tovatash of the woman's possession, so therefore the Chachamim entitled him to a portion of them or not returning it in order to encourage him to marry her. The Shniot Arayot is a knas midrabanan for violating the din drabanan is a knas that they reconnais her, right? That she will not get the ketubah back, so she would not, Lisha Er, she would not remain there. And the regards to Ilonit, what we think here is that it's a mekach ta'ut, right? He married her on a premise, right? That she was a certain person, a certain type, right? Incapable of certain things. And now it finds out that that's not the case. So we have a mekach ta'ut over here. Now, even though it's a mekach ta'ut, if it's a mekach ta'ut, she should also get all her possessions back. The possessions she brought into the marriage were premised on the marriage being sustained or, right, continuing. The fact now that the marriage is terminated should also entitle her to the return of her items. So what do we see from here? That mechila b'ta'ut avi mechila. The fact that she foregoes in the beginning, right, the possessions, gives her full, right, she loses full rights to these objects at this point. Where it says, velohi, and it's not true. None of this is true. Lo ona habit yufte. Ona is not a question on Rav Nachman's position. Velo elainit misayile. And elainit is no proof or support to his position. Lo ona to yufte. Ona is not a question to him. Why? De lo yoda de ita ona de machil gabe. You can't call it mechila b'taut if there is no knowledge of the fact that he's being mochel over here. Remember earlier in the Gemara we discussed the differences between Ona and Gezel, right, and Ribit. And the item by Ona was that he just doesn't know. When you do the transaction, even though they've interacted and they've agreed, there's a Lokeach and a Mocher, and they both are parties and willing parties to the transaction, but the Lokeach, if he's Nitanet, is not aware of the fact that he was overcharged. If he's not aware of the fact that he's overcharged, then to be Mochel, right, or to assume that Mechila B'taot, I'm a Mechila, who would say such a thing? He never knew to be mochel, to be mechila b'taut over here. Although I don't need misayle, and I don't need not a proof to Rav Nachman, the nechila, the tipokala shmadishut. Then no, she has an agenda over here. The mechila here is not simply mechila b'taut. She thought that the marriage would continue, and therefore she's mochel, her husband's usage of all of these items. She's mochel, the peirot, she's mochel, the blot. No, the reason is that she wants to be classified as a married woman, right? Almost similar to the Tav Lamatan Du, the Tav Armula. This idea that the woman wants to shame Ishut on her, because she wants to shame Ishut, even though she might even know that the marriage might dissolve, she still wants, for every time she can have, the marriage intact. She would like to have that so she can be classified as a married woman or having been married at some point and no longer a single woman.
Can you explain the... Again, by Ona, why that's not a kasha and Rav Nachman?
Because the Rav Nachman's premise is that if I'm mochel b'taut, I mean that I see something happening, and then I do not object to it transpiring. For instance, someone's taking fruit from your field, where you think the field is either sold to him or he's entitled to take those fruits, and you see him doing it and you do not object, that's called mechila b'taut. Because you know it's happening, right, and you're not objecting, but that's a mechila, but it's a mechila that's premised on a underlying or mistaken underlying understanding of the circumstances. By Ona, there is no understanding of the circumstances. All you think that happened was that we had a transaction. You're not mechel on anything because you're not seeing anything transpire in front of you because you're not aware that there was some sort of overpayment here. Without the awareness of overpayment, we can't even say mechila b'taut. Mechila requires you to understand that something happened and to be mechel on it. In the other cases where there's fruit, he's taking fruit, you're aware of the circumstance. You're not aware that he's not entitled to it, but you're aware at least of the circumstance that's transpiring, and you mochel because you never object. Over here, you can't object because you don't even know there's Ona. Now, if he was aware there's Ona, and he didn't think that he could get it back, that would be mechila b'taut. Right? Over here, he's not even aware of the Ona to reach the point where we're talking about mechila b'taut, because you can't be mochel in something you don't know. All right. Next case in the Gemara. This woman sold an individual man, basically made the man or individual an agent for her. Right, go ahead and purchase this land from one of my relatives. She goes, go purchase a piece of land, attractive land from one of my relatives. Azal Zavinlo, he went ahead and purchased it on her behalf. Amalei, now the seller, her relative who is the seller says to him, the agent, He says, when I sell this property to you, I want you to know that if I get cash, I want to be able to buy back this property. Right? This sale is predicated, or it sounds like, I want to predicate this sale on the fact that if I get come into money later on, then I can buy back the land. So I'm like, what was the agent's response? At v'navla achai. Right, so now there are different interpretations of what av navla achai. Rashi brings two, one from the Gaonim, which is, it's navla is the Aramaic term for the other one, meaning that it means either you and her, right, or you and him. Either way. But over here it would be you and her. Achai are relatives. That's one possible way to read it. Rashi says brings the other interpretation which he likes, which is Navla was her name. At v'navla achai. You and Navla, this woman Navla, are relatives. Work it out between you. I'm simply an agent to purchase the property. You want to create terms in the deal. That's between you and the buyer and your relatives. So you two work it out. I'm just here buying the property. Now, what happened? He made a statement, and the response was, it's between you guys. It's not my problem. It's between you guys. Now, the transaction went through because he purchased the property, and the transaction went through. What happens to this condition at this point? Because the agent did not accept the condition. He deferred the decision of the condition to the, right, the lokeach herself, to the woman herself. On the other hand, the seller said, I want this condition in there, but the buyer didn't necessarily agree to it. So what is the standing of this tonight? So I'm a rabba bar rahuna. Call at binavla achai. Anybody who makes a response like that, right? Amar samchadate, below gamar amakne. So therefore, there are, as machlokas here about what this means, it's a cryptic statement in the Gemara. Because usually we say, samchadate, right, is reliance. So whose reliance are we talking about? It sounds like we're talking about the reliance of the seller. Right? The reliance of the seller is that he's so mechdat on the fact that he said, I'm able to purchase it back. So the fact that he's so mechdat on that, then it says, v'lo gamar umakne. He's not gomer umakne, he's not willing, right, to sell the item without this condition being embedded, right, embedded in the contract. It sounds like that he's relying on the fact that he made such a statement, and that such a statement is then therefore embedded in the transaction. And if not, or whatever, then there's no if it's not agreed to, if that's not the condition that's agreed to, then there's no gemir sadat. There was no sale that transpired over here. Now, what does that mean? There's two possible outcomes over here. So one possibility is that the transaction actually works, but only works with the condition on it. I mean, when we say lo gomer amakne, it means he's not gomer amakne unless this condition is embedded, and therefore this condition is embedded in the, right, in the sale. That's one possibility. Or you could say that it is lo gomer amakne means legamre. Right, so that's the way the Rambam learns this Gemara is lo gomer amakne means legamre. It doesn't work at all. The transaction is null and void because he wanted a condition. Nobody agreed to that condition. That means that neither party is, right, gemir tadat here. Because one party says no, one party says yes, you haven't agreed to anything. Otherwise, the other mifarshim, other rishonim, believe that lo gomer amakne means that the condition is embedded in the transaction. Now, aro hadro perimai. The land goes back, right, because he can purchase it, right? If you can purchase it, either according to Rambam, the land goes back because the transaction was invalid, right? Or according to the other Rishonim, that this condition is embedded in the transaction, therefore you could buy out the land, you could take the land back. Perimai, what is the status of the fruits in this instance? The Gemara wants to know, Perimai, what's the status of these fruits in the interim period between the time that they come into possession of the property and the time they have to put back? What's the status? Ribit ktutza havu, yotzi midayani. This is ribit ktutza. It's absolute ribit over here. And therefore, tzutzeh b'danayanim. Right? Probably we'd look at it ribit ktutza because it was agreed to up front. Meaning it was something that was agreed to at the time of the loan. Right? It was something that was clear up front. And therefore, maybe it's ribit ktutza. O dilma. Ki avak ribit avu bein yotzim. Or maybe it's avak ribit because it's done in a package of mekach u'memkar. Since it's packaged as mekach u'memkar, maybe it should be classified simply as avak ribit. And then you couldn't remove the payroll. Right, so the subject or the status of the payroll we would determine on how we look at the repeat being charged over here.
I'm not saying that it's possible that they will not do this for every time, so therefore it's not definite. And then we had that problem. But it also could be avak ribit because of that. Since it was not definite in the first place,
that. So I'm a rabba bar rakuna, mistavra ki avak ribit abu, ve'inu tzim b'dayanim. Tzavak Ribit over here, because it's not, and it's not, it's Abak Ribit, and it's not Yotzim B'Yadayanim, that you can't remove it. So because of that, right, the property will be returned, because that's either the condition in the transaction, according to Rambam, the whole transaction was invalid. With regards to the pirot have a status of Abak Ribit, right, especially according to the Rambam, where it's definitely a loan, because the whole transaction is null and void, right, so therefore, if it's definitely a loan, it's going to be considered Ribit, but it's only Abak Ribit, because it was packaged as a purchase and a buyback. So this package that way, that's classified as a Avak Ribit, even though this agreement was in place up front for many of the reasons that we just discussed, which is, right, like you're suggesting, there's a possibility that it would not be every year they get fruits. You could have a zero. You could have a year where it doesn't produce fruits. And number two is that because it's a buy, it's a purchase and a a repurchase. It's a sale with a repurchase agreement, and then maybe that looks like a Avak Ribit. Rava says the same thing. Since it's a Avak Ribit, we do not return it, we do not remove it, because of the statement of Rav Elazar that we saw earlier in this parak, that Ribit Ktutza, which is Deoraisa, can be removed by the Dayanim. Ribit the Rabbanan, that is not the case. So I'm really Abai the Rabba, Mashkanta Mai. What is the din of a Mashkon? Now, this case of Mashkon is that he's Mashkon Lo Sadeh, he gave him a field to watch, and then he did not agree to let him eat the peirot, right? B'shem Ribit. He didn't give him any permission. He didn't say, eat the fruits as payment while he held on to the field, right? But he said, he just sat down. They just said, here, take the field as a collateral. When he took the field as a collateral, right, this individual went down, and guess what? He started to eat the fruits. He started to take the fruits from there. What is the status of those fruits? I mean, it's very similar to our transaction above. That's what Gemara wants to know. Hotum time of my b'shem to lo kotzlei. Just like in the previous case, lo kotzlei, meaning that they did not define how much he's going to eat. There's no quantification, right, of what the ribit will be. Achanami lo kotzlei, also over here. There's no permission given. There's no fixed amount that he's going to collect as his ribit. Odilma, hatam zvine hafalva. Maybe the difference has to do with the way that it's packaged. Right, in the case of the woman where the agent was buying it and you have the buyback option, in that case is all structured as a sale and then a buyback. Over here, it's clear that the transaction is halvah. It's not even packaged up as a mekach chumemkar. He's handing it to him as a mashkon. He's handing it to him as collateral, which clearly is a loan. So maybe what determines, right, whether the ribit over here is classified as ribit ktutza or is it classified as avak ribit? Does it have to do with the fact that it's packaged as a loan versus packaged as mekach chumemkar? And therefore, in the case of mashkon, it would be ribit ktutza, but by the case of, right, mekach chumemkar, the buyback option, it would be avak ribit. Or is the whole issue the lo katzlei? Meaning that the ribit was not quantified and defined up front, and it wasn't even permitted. I mean, it wasn't that there was any agreement to eat the fruits up front. It's just that the buyer in one case, and over here, the person taking the mashkon is just going down and taking the fruits. He didn't demand that up front. He didn't ask for that. They didn't quantify. They didn't set that up as the original transaction. And then from both these cases, there's a failure on that side. If that's the failure, maybe they both are midi rabbanan, and it could be yotze. It would not be yotze. Are you there, Danny?
Or would we just consider him negative here if he never gave him authorization to take it? So he's just taking it, he's appropriating it, you know, on his own. It's connected, he should be entitled to recover.
Right, the point is that he does own the property. In the interim period, he does own the property. Okay, it's clear that even by Mashkon, Mid Rabbi Yitzchak, he owns the property. All right, and over here, by the buyback, the transaction with the buyback, you clearly own the property in that interim period. The only question is it a Avak Ribit? The Chachamim don't want you to do it because it looks like you've just packaged up and made it look like it really is a loan, but you made it fancy and got out of the problem. But you own the property. There's no question that the person holding the property during that period of time owns the property. The question is, can he eat the payroll? They have the same din over here because the whole issue is that it was not defined as ribit up front, it wasn't quantified, it wasn't agreed to up front, and therefore it's considered avak ribit. In both these instances, you would not be able to remove the payroll from either from the malveh, the creditor, or from the purchaser in the other instance. He is not obligated to give it back. He's violated it. He's violated avak ribit mit rabbanan. He's violated
his
service.
So be begging no one's
sake. Right.
But he has a chuvah to give it back.
Yeah. Right. It would be the right thing for him to do. I don't know if you can obligate him to. Obligation is a strong term. He's obligated to return. He's violated his sword. Now, you're asking me, can even if he gives it back, the question is he rectifying the Yisur? I'm not sure that's the case. He might actually give it back and say Yidei Shemayim, but even if he gives it back, it's not clear that he's rectified that thing that he beat. Amar Rapapi, Abad Ravina Uvda v'choshiv, v'apik peire, delok rabba bar Ravuna. So Rapapi had a case that came in front of him of this similar type of ilk, right, of this classification. V'choshiv, and he calculated how much, right, was consumed. Okay, he calculated how much worth of payroll were consumed, and he removed the payroll to local Rabbi Barbuna. He's disagreeing with Rabbi Barbuna over here and saying that you could remove the payroll. Not only is the Ara removed, but even the payroll are removed. As Rashi points out, that before Rabbi Barbuna is arguing on our position of Rav Nachman that we saw before. Rav Nachman says, Hadra Ara Hadra Peyre. Right, that was on yesterday's, the end of yesterday's daf. Rabbi Barhuna comes and says, no, Hadra Ara Lo Hadra Peyre. So over here, when Rav Papi says that Ravina did a Psak Alocha, he was doing like Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman says, Hadra Ara Hadra Peyre, that they both go back. Not only does the Ara go back, but even the Peyrot go back. So that's the Psak of Ravina. Now, Amar Mar Berei de Rav Yosef Mishmei de Ravo. There is a new case here. We're going to have a series of cases that relate to these types of mashkon. So there's a mashkon there. We have mashkanta ba'atra demsalke. So now they have different mashkonot, which is that you have a possibility. Cities had different minhagim with regards to mashkon, with regards to collateral. There were certain cities where if you took collateral, then if the lovet, if the debtor shows up with his cash and his money, he gets his mashkon back immediately. As soon as he gives you the money, the mashkon is returned to you, right, transaction over. There were other cities where the minhag was that the mashkon stayed with the creditor for a certain duration, irrespective, right, of the repayment of the loan. I mean, that you couldn't prepay the loan. The loan is a, right, there was a penalty for prepayment. You had to keep the loan for the full duration, and you were not entitled to remove the mashkon from the creditor's possession. You were not allowed to buy it back before the expiry of the loan, which is, say, 3-year loan. So in the first city, even within the 3 years, you had the ability to have a prepayment and get your mashkon back. In the other cities, you had to wait for the 3 years, and then even if you paid within 3 years, you would not receive your mashkon back until the end of that 3-year period. Right, so now, the statement here is, I'm a rabbi, the Rav Yosef Shmei, the Rava, ha-mashkanta ba'atrit misalke. A mashkon in a city where they allowed the buyback of the mashkon, right, prior to the expiration of the loan, afo shir zuzei misalkinen le. In the interim, the creditor is eating fruits on this mashkon. Again, he's eating them inappropriately. He should not be eating the fruits on this mashkon, because that is avak ribit. Nevertheless, he did eat them. Now, the question is, when did the debtor show up and object to the eating of the fruits, the creditor? So, if he shows up before he's eaten enough fruits to be classified as the keren, to be classified as the principal, then we assume that the peyrot that he ate in the interim were basically repayment. Because the debtor can say, mali peyrot, mali kesef, he can say, I have to pay you back. So what's the difference? I pay you back in cash, or I pay you back in my peyrot that you're eating. They're my peyrots, you're eating them, and so you're taking my money. So either way, I paid you back, and if I paid you back, right, that should be a deduction against the principal of the loan. On the other hand, if the achila has exceeded, the amount of peyrot he has consumed exceeds the principal of the loan, right, then it's clear, right, that the excess, or at least the excess part, right, is considered ribit. It's not a payback of the loan because it's far exceeding the value of the loan. So in that case, lo mafkinenei, that which is tough ad chachvi, whatever is above it, lo mafkinenei, we don't take it out. Lo mechashvin mishtar l'shtara. If they have multiple transactions outstanding between this debtor, creditor and debtor, so we don't say, listen, the creditor now ate in excess of the current loan that this was a mashkon for. But we happen to have another outstanding loan. So we don't say, okay, up to the principal of the first loan, he wiped out. The excess that he's eating now should be applied to the second transaction. No, we don't say that. We say because it's collateralized on this loan, it's only viewed within the context of this loan, and therefore the excess, right, is clearly rebeat.
In the case where he consumes the latter case, where he consumes more than the amount of the loan, is it just the amount in excess of the loan that we don't recover from him? But we still say that up until the amount of the loan, we're still going to treat that as a repayment. The rest of it is about the risk.
So that's Fehlum of Kinemilei, right? It sounds like the excess is what we don't take out of it. No, but or you could read it about Tfei, if it's an excess, Lom of Kinemilei at all.
But it doesn't say Lom of Kinemilei.
Right.
I mean, the further
so I think I would agree. I think the way I read it is that the excess amounts you do not remove. I think that is the way I would read the Gemara. That's how I read it, but I think that is the case. Okay, Utibi Yatme, when it comes to Yitomim, Achal Shiur Zuzei, Misalkinan Lay. So it's the same din that if he eats up to the, if it catch him before, right, he's got an excess of the principal, we can assume that it is a principal payment, right? Achal Tvei, now here there's a machlokus in the Girsa here. The Girsa we have is Achal Tvei Machkinan Minei. If he eats in excess, we do remove it from him. Why is that? So Rashi explains why that is. That is because we always consider Beis Din in the ear to be Avihen Shel Yitomim. They are the representatives of the Yitomim in all cases. They have the rights to remove monetary obligations. Since they have rights to adjudicate, they are not mochel on this excess piece. It's as if they caught him early on. As if they objected before that fact. If they object before that fact, then the excess, that anything they eat afterwards, as if it was part of either repayment, or once you reach the excess of the Karen, it'll be stealing. I mean, it's no longer classified as a repeat, but rather as money of the debtor. So that's the way Rashi reads it. And then you can see here that Joseph Grah brings a Girsas Arambam. The Chen Girsas Arif is that it's lo mafkinan mineh. That it's the same as the case above. Lo mafkina mine, that the din of the Yitomim so far is exactly the same according to the Rambam and the Rif. On the other hand, the difference for the Rambam and the Rif, and of course the kosher came for Rashi, is that mechashvina and mishtar l'shtara. Right, that we do allow you to apply the excess to another shtar. According to Rashi, it's a kosher came because we always say that it's the debtor's money. I mean, it's always the Yitomim's money. So of course, if you exceed this loan, it's his money, so either you return his money or you apply it to the other loan. It's not even a question. According to the Rambam, that's the Ikar Chiddush here by Yitomim. The Ikar Chiddush by Yitomim is that we do say, Me'mafkin Mishtar to Shtar. We do allow him to move it from Shtar to Shtar, even though, if it's Tafi, lo mafkin minei. If it went in excess, we don't allow you to remove it if it's classified as repeat. But if they do have another outstanding loan, we do allow you to apply it to that other outstanding loan. Now, Amar Avashi, Hashtad Amart, now that you said, Achal Tvei, lo mafkin minei, now that you said already that when you eat in excess, we don't take it away, then even when he eats within the Karen, we don't take it away from him. Without paying him off. My time up. Right? Because taking him away without Zuze, without paying him, is the equivalent of basically removing it from him. Now, it's a vakribit. Vakribit cannot be returned or cannot be removed. Can't be removed at all. The dayanim don't have the rights to remove such a thing as a vakribit. So now, because what Ravashi is basically saying is that you're claiming, or you're making a classification that when he comes down without permission to eat, that it depends when you catch him what the classification of that eating is. If we catch him early, then we classify his eating as piron. If we catch him later on, then we classify the eating as being repeat. Ravashi says, what are you talking about? There was never agreement between these two parties that when he ate piron, it would be piron. That would be a payment. I mean, if already you're willing to classify the excess as being repeat, that means that it's not his money. That's basically what you're saying at the end. It's not your money. He's taking it because as repeat, which is wrong, but he's still taking it. Now, if you classify the excess as repeat, and we're not looking at it as being the debtor's money, that means even the portion that's within the context of the Karen, within the limit of the Karen, should also be, right, the creditor's money that he's taking, because you can't all of a sudden subdivide the money or the payroll to the middle. They had no agreement, right? There is no conversation between them. The underlying assumption is that whatever he's taking is repeat. That's the way he's looking at it. He's not looking at this piron. There was no agreement that it would be piron.
He'll be restored.
What? Yeah, because he loses everything. And according to Ravashi, not only does he lose the excess, he loses even the stuff up to the principal. He catches it early and comes in. Right? And he blocks it. He won't even get the principal because there was no agreement that this should be a reduction of the principal alone. So it's a vakribit. He shouldn't be doing it, but it's a vakribit, and a vakribit cannot be removed.
If he comes in and says, Mali, he was not considering it to be.
That's not the debtor's choice over here. It's in the possession of the creditor. The creditor is eating them. The creditor can say, I was taking it as repeat.
Why have we ever seen that one guy can unilaterally decide that he's taking repeats? There's always two sides to the transaction, right? That there's an agreement between them.
Again, he owns the land. When he gets the collateral, he owns the land. He eats the payroll. He shouldn't be eating the payroll because it looks like repeat. Not that he's not entitled to eat the payroll necessarily. Mimina Torah, he could have eaten the payroll without a problem, and it would not be an issue at all. Chachamim say, don't eat the payroll, because it's a vakribit.
I don't know if Rashi is saying that, but
You have the other tzad. I mean, Rav Ashi is disagreeing with the position of Margarita de Rav Yosef. Rav Margarita de Rav Yosef says what you're saying, that there isn't. There isn't differentiation.
I think he's right.
So, Abba Rav Ashi, Ubdo, Yitomim, Ktanim, Kigdolim. Rav Ashi, as opposed to differentiating between Yitomim and regular people, and normal transactions, over here he took a case of Yitomim, Ktanim, and he treated them just like Gidolim. Right? Because he's the Shittato. What's the Shittato of Rav Ashi? Rav Ashi believes that from the time that you start eating, right away, it's classified as a Rekribit. It may call after Yitomim to be Hotsio. Therefore, even in a case of Yitomim Tanim, it's not going to help you. I mean, that if you believe that there's some sort of differentiation between the eating, when you catch them up to the Karen, up to the principal amount, versus the excess amount, then you can make a claim that by Yitomim Tanim, we can be more Makil, right? Then at least then we can, forcibly, we can say that the Beis Din stepped in early, even though they weren't there. But if we never say that anybody could step in, and it's a Vak Mibit from day one, then Beis Din, no Beis Din, nobody can ever be step in. I mean, it's always a Bakri Bit, and you can never return it, or never be forced to return it. So in that case, there's no differentiation between the Tomim and regular people, because the Beis Din is irrelevant in this situation. Now, Amar Rava, Brei Rav Yosef Shmei Rava, this is another right, statement by them. Hai Mashkanta Ba'achet the Mesalke. Again, the Mashkom, in the city that they do, right, allow the buyback or prepayment loan to buy back the Mashkom. Lo Nechol Ela B'Nechaita. Now, the proper way to do it, right? So this is the way. What's the proper way to do it? The proper way to do it is to set up the transaction that you will only do this b'nechaita, that there will be a reduction in the principal. So if you want to know how can a mocher, how does the creditor properly take care of the mashkon and then eat the fruits without being in violation of isur, he has to do it b'nechaita, with a reduction. Now, what is the b'nechaita? Chaita does not mean that he has to reduce it by the value of the fruits that he ate. What he does is he says a fixed amount per year. Per year, I will reduce it by 100 shekel. 100 shekel, your loan will go. It's 1,000 shekel loan. Each year that I have your mashkon and I eat the fruit, 100 shekel off. Now, why does this work? This works because he's not guaranteed to make an excess of that 100. Meaning that the field could produce 150, or the field could produce 50. The field could produce 200, could produce zero. So in that case, when I'm being reducing it by nechaita, by the reduction in principal amount each year, means that I'm purchasing with a risk. I'm purchasing the output of the field that has risk involved in it. That's a fine transaction. That's not repeat. That's a transaction. That's a sale of my output of my land. So that's allowed and that's permitted. So if you want to do it properly, do it b'nechaita. Now, Tzurbim d'Rabbanan, afil b'nechaita l'neichum. A Talmud Chacham, a young Talmud Chacham, should not do it even b'nechaita. And Rashi says, why Tzurbim d'Rabbanan? I love this. Rashi, Tzurach, Yashir, D'Rachav. He has to be careful about his ways. Kadesh up and mutar lo. To be kadesh even things that are mutar. Pen ilamdu mimenu lezazel b'yisurim. Maybe others will learn from him to be mezazel and yisurim. So true, this avoids the problem of avak ribit, but only if it's structured properly and done properly. We have avak ribit. Others may not understand it. All they see is that the creditor is eating the fruits after there was a loan over here. They don't realize that was nechaita. They're not so careful. They don't check out all the circumstances, and people may learn that. So we say, Tzurbim d'Rabbanan, don't do it in this manner. Ela b'may neichul. So how can Tzurbim d'Rabbanan create a loan like this where he can't eat the fruits? It says, b'kitzuta. And he can do it b'kitzuta. Here the Gemara does not define it. The Gemara is about to define what kitzuta is. Anicha l'man d'amar kitzuta shari. That works well according to one who says kitzuta is permitted. L'man d'amar kitzuta asira ma'ita l'meymar. According to one who says kitzuta doesn't even work as asur, then what are you going to say? Now what is kitzuta? Did mar kitzuta. Pliga about Ravach and Ravina. Ravach and Ravina argue about what kitzuta is. Chadamar kitzuta sharia. One says kitzuta sharia, but chadamar kitzuta isira. Hechi dami kitzuta. What is this case of kitzuta? Damale. Ad chameshanim achinu Allah below nechaita. The one opinion, we got two opinions on what kitzuta is. The first one is that for the first 5 years, I will eat peirot without any reduction against the principle of the loan. Mikan veilech shamin alecha kulu peri. From that point forward, after the 5 year period, I will assess the true value of the peirot that I'm consuming, and that will be used as a reduction of the loan. So here there's a machlokas, Ravina and Rav Acha, about whether such a setup is permitted, right, or not permitted.
Why should be allowed?
Why is it not?
He's getting more than he.
Because he's not doing any nechaita up front. I mean, why isn't that first 5 years?
Right.
So that's the ikadamri. I don't know how to explain it so well the first case because there is no nechaita in that instance. It's not so clear why it's okay. Okay, ikadamri. Let's say kol below nechaita asur. basically what you're asking, right? Yossi, which is, yeah, that there's no reduction in the principle, it can't be mutar. Who would ever agree that it's mutar? Ahechi dami kitsuta. So what's the case of kitsuta? The amalei, achameshanim achilina b'nechaita. For the first 5 years, we'll do it as a fixed reduction of the law. 100 shekel per year, fixed reduction. From after 5 years, then, shamin and lachfule peri, then we're going to assess the full value of the perot that you're eating. So now, the one who says it's a sur in the first case, I mean, there's a machlok sutin, Rav Acha and Ravina in the first case. Whoever says it's a sur in that case will permit it in the ikadamri case. Because there it's a much better situation, because obviously there is nechaita all the way through. On the other hand, the one who says it's a sur in the second case, even in the second case where you have it being a fixed reduction for the first 5 years, and then true reduction after that, then hechi shari the mecha. Where's the case that can be mutar? So my says, shari ki mashkanta the sura. Right? It only works the case of the mashkanta the sura. What is the case of mashkanta the sura? Dichide behachi. Because it says in it like this, b'mashlim shnaya yilein tipakara da'ablo kesef. This land will revert back to the debtor without any money exchange at the end of this fixed term. At the end of this term, he gets back the property. So in that case, it clearly looks like, right, that he's not taking me beat, that he's doing a reduction of the loan, because in the end, he pays no money and he gets his field back. Right, so now, what's the answer? The answer is that we have, Rabbi Yosef Mishmei the Rabbah says, if you want to have the ability to eat the payroll, if you as a creditor want to eat the payroll, you have to have it that there's nachaita. You have to have it that there's a reduction of principal each year. How does that reduction of principal work? According to, if you're not a tzurim de rabbanan, you just do a fixed payment per year and you're fine. No problem. That's clear. Babakmi bitch, you're on the. Now, a tzurim de rabbanan, you want to be above and beyond, then you do it at kitsuta. Better argument what kitsuta is kitsuta a deferral of the payment back, and then eventually you get they start with the real value repayment? Or is it that you have a fixed payment for the first 5 years, and then you go to the real value repayments after that 5 years? Right, that could be the possibility. And the last possibility is, according to one of those there, says that the only way you can do it, it's to recommend it, is with a mashkanta de sura, which is that there's reduction, and in the end, the land goes back after a fixed period of time. Right, well, the ferry, whatever you can consume in that time, could be more, could be less, but in the end, it goes back without money. Tosfos does ask, what's the difference in the end? Ma'ad ben zeh, the nechaita. So what's the difference between this mashkanta de sura and the other cases where you're reducing the principal? I mean, if you reduce the principal to the point there is no principal, what happens to the property? It goes back without a payment. So why, by a mashkanta de sura, where the agreement up front is that it will go back without payment, why does that make it better? What is so good about this mashkanta de sura? So the Tosa says, Ishlomar, de machar de mefaresh kein, lo mixte kal ba'a. That's what Tosa says. Because you define it this way, it does not look like a loan. Elo lo kagech mimenu peirot kol hashanim alalu ba'otan damim. That's why. Because the fact that you define up front that the land will go back without payment at this fixed period of time, what does the transaction look like? Not like a loan anymore, but rather purchasing the output of this land over the next 10 years. Looks like you bought the output of the land for the next 10 years. How do they do with the loan? We took a fixed amount, and we say, okay, 1,000 shekel, quote unquote, was the loan. We're basically saying, 1,000 shekel, I get the output for the next 10 years, sure, and that's it, right?
Sure.
Right. Aval, k'sheinu kutev lo kach. But if he doesn't write this, but you do a reduction each year, it looks like, why are you getting this? He's buying it for a fixed amount. 100 shekel per year is getting a reduction. Many years, that's going to be below the market price of what he's eating out of the field. So what does it basically look like? It looks like that when you're eating from the field, he's discounting you the payroll to the field. He's basically selling them to you, but at a discount because there's still a loan outstanding. When there is no, right, again, when there's no time, when there's a fixed time limit and up front it's going to be, then it looks like you quantify the amount of money you're willing to pay for the output of that land, and that's it. And if you do it year by year, your reduction in each year, 100 shekel, many years it's going to be in excess of the 100, it looks like you discounted it only because there was a loan outstanding. That looks much more like we've eaten. Again, in the end it's mutar, because there was a chance that you would lose in that case. But from the point, the standpoint of the Talmud Chacham, and her perception from other people, if you do it, the mashkanta de sura looks much better because it looks like the whole agreement set up front, and right, there's no question of each year looking at it and trying to quantify if you gave him a discount. Right now, Rapapa v'Ravuna b'Reidu Rabshua Amrei Tarvayu. They both say, "Hai mashkanta ba'atra de misalkin." Again, a mashkon in a place where you're allowed to buy out the mashkon, you're allowed to prepay the mashkon. Ein bachov goveh hemenu. Right, then a bachov cannot grab from it. Ve'ein b'chor notel pishnayim, and a b'chor may not take pishnayim, u'shvi'it misham tata, and shvi'it will remove it. Or ba'atzim to lom salke, in a place where you're not misalekit, then ba'chol kovay menu. What's the case over here? What's the issue? Right? The creditor now has in his possession a property. Now he has it. Now he's sitting with this property. Then he, let's say, either dies. So for instance, he dies. If he dies over here, what happens to the property? This collateral then rolls down to his children. Now when it's in his possession and he's the creditor. Right, then we don't care that it's metaltalin, we don't care that it's Ara, we don't care why he owns this property. He owes money on a loan. He has to give, right, repay a loan, and he is obligated to repay the loan. The creditor can come and take that from him no matter what, right, irrespective of why he owns it or what his ownership in this item is. On the other hand, once he dies, we know that there's a bifurcation between the, right, of the Malveh, the creditor's property. What is that bifurcation? That if it's Karka, if it's Ara, then the Baal Chol can come and claim from it, even from the Itomim. Why? Because it was Kvar Meshubat. It was already encumbered, right, prior to that point in time. On the other hand, right, when it was Metaltalin, when it's Metaltalin, it's not encumbered at the time of the Baal Chol, and therefore when it passes to the Itomim, right, it doesn't really belong to the creditor here versus the Itomim. So if that's the case over here, once he dies, what is the status of this Mashkon? How do we rear this Mashkon? Does he have an ownership in it to the sense that he owns the arrow? If he owns the arrow, then it would really pass down, and the Atonement would be responsible to repay from it. If we say simply that the arrow is salki, that they can remove it from him, then his ownership in the land is not really an ownership, it's a temporary ownership, it's really metaltalin here to him. So that's what they are saying. In an arrow of salki, in an area where the debtor can come along and repay at any time and take his land back, what's that indicating to you? That he doesn't really have real ownership over the land. A certain amount of ownership for a temporary, but it doesn't have an aura ownership. It's not a real, you know, sale in that sense. No man in a city where Bobasalke, you can't prepay the loan, that means for that duration of time, he really owns the land. It's basically a sale and a buyback option in the backhand.
Right? Isn't the Rabbani getting to the fruit anyhow? What's the benefit? What's enough to matter? If you're getting the fruit because of the previous, what's enough to what does he mean by owning that aura?
Oh, in the interim period, you mean?
Yeah, what's the two cases? If we anyhow say, can you?
But if they made it in a case of Nechaita,
right.
The case of, right, Bechor. What's the case of Bechor? Bechor only collects inheritance where it's Kimechuzak, when you really own it. When you have true, right, Shlita over the property, then the Bechor is entitled to it. What's Ra'ui Kimechuzak? Something that's Ra'ui, in the future will come to you. Now we don't say that the Bechor has no Telfish time. So now, again, when you look at this Mashkom, right, does it belong to the creditor? Well, that depends. If he defaults on the loan, the answer is it does belong to him, and then it would be Muxak, but that's only Ra'ui. That could come into his possession. But right now, does it belong to him enough that's classified as Muxak? That depends on the situation. Again, if it's a Aret Lo Misalke, right, in a place where they do not remove you from it, yes, you do own it. You own it for that period of time. Then you're Muxak in it, and then Bukhor can take each night. On the other hand, right, where it, right, he's not... The debtor can remove you from the line at any time, then you're not considered mukzak enough. It's only ra'uik mukzak, and then when it's ra'uik mukzak, that means what? He can't take it. Now shvi'it. Why isn't shvi'it shomate the loan? Right, we learned this in shvi'it before. What do you have to have? You have to have it be as if it was collected already. It has to be as if collected. So now over here, in our case, right, when shvi'it mishmamtena is why? Because it's like shushar milvei b'shtar. It's like any other milbev, any other loan that's done by Ishtar. Balcho is koneh, the mashkon that's in his hand. It's koneh, the mashkon in his hand, that's considered as if the loan is collected already. As if the loan's collected already, then we say, fine, then the shvit's not mishamtem. On the other hand, if what? If we don't consider it, we consider it like aro, we consider it like land, then it's just a mashkon, temporary period, then he doesn't have anything that's collected at it because it's going to be returned. So again, what's the difference? The difference will be in an aro. Right, that misalke that they do it, then when they would take it back any time, he really doesn't have possession over this property. If he doesn't have real possession over the property, then the shvit will be shaktena. On the other hand, if it's arik lo misalke, then for those 3 years he really owns the land. If he really owns the land, he can consider as if he collected the loan, right? Because if he collected the loan, then the shvit does not mishamate the loan. So that's the statement they made, or differentiation they made between cities where you can move and you can't remove. So this mashkon, a place where they do remove it or the prepayments are allowed. That we allow them to move it even from the dates that are sitting on the, for instance, he laid out mats on the ground to catch the dates that are falling from the tree. So these dates that fell from the tree, they're on the mats. He comes along and pays the money back. We say, oh no, you can't take, even though you already the dates are off the tree, they're on the ground, on his stuff, So he can't take them. Then, and if he moved them from the mats into his baskets, and he lifted up those baskets, and he's koneh them. Once he's koneh them, we don't remove them from him. According to one who says, this is, you know, machlok, it's whether the possession, the kelim of a lokeach, even in the position of the mocher, even in the property of the mocher, can be koneh for him. Lokeach is able to be koneh. Even then, if they fall on his mats, then it works, because it's his mats, right? It's the creditor's mats, and the stuff fell on the creditor's mats. So then you have to do a kinyan of bah to own it, because he owns it because it fell into his kelim. But what you see here that the buyback stops everything right on that spot, and if you haven't taken possession of the fruits, right, then you are entitled to take it back.
Have a problem about
the fruits. Yeah. Right? No, it depends. You did in the chayta, right? You have to. No, it's not always going to be. It depends how you structure it.
Right. If you have a buyback agreement, it's a simple case. You didn't do anything.
Even if it's a buyback agreement, if you keep it, just keep it. Right. Then once you've taken it, it's done. Okay. Now, Mert says pshita. It's simple. But atra the mizalke in a place where they do allow prepayment. And he says that we're doing this bone on a condition that you can't remove me. He says, that's what we agreed to. We agreed to that. And Rashi says that there's a kinyan at the beginning of the transaction. It says there's a kinyan at the beginning of the transaction between us. That's fine. Ella ba'ashu to lo misalke, in a city where they don't necessarily allow you to come in. And he says that I want the right to repay it. I want the right to be able to repay and take my property back. What is the din? Do they have to have a form of kinyan or formal kinyan in here or not? So the question is, what's the question of the Gemara? What's the problem of the Gemara over here? Is the problem, which most of the Rishonim reject, is the problem because who is supposed to make the, who's making the conditions over here? Right? In the case where it's to the benefit of the mocher, I mean it's benefit to the, say, the creditor. Or the benefit of the creditor is that he says, normally you can prepay, but I'm saying you can't repay. So now who makes the condition? The mocher. And the mocher makes the creditor makes the condition, and he makes the kinyan on the property. So he makes the kinyan with the condition, it's fine. In the other instance, what happens, it's the lokeach that should be make, is making the condition. Lokeach is saying that, what I will have the right to repay it. Now, if I have the right to repay it, and then the mocher is making the kinyan, right, does, can you lock in a lokeach's, right, statement without the kinyan of the lokeach? So that's the question over here. Most Rishonim reject, they say that's not the issue. Over here. But they say the issue is, and that's mostly is when this was done, right? Whether it was done at B'Shat Natan Ma'ot, if it's done at the time that the transaction started, you can make whatever conditions you want at the beginning of the loan, and therefore you can transact and you can make the conditions. What happens if it's done in the middle of the loan, later on? Right? Once it's happening later on in the loan, in the period where it's not the beginning and there's no kinyan over here, does it work or not? So the Gemara says, well, in the case where he says, I'm not going to leave, right, then it works. Case where he says, I will have a prepayment option, right, then the Gemara says, we don't know if he needs a kinyan or not. It sounds like he really does need a kinyan. Why? So the way the Yosef brings down here and explains it, which is, it has to do with what is the status right now of the land. The status of the right now of the land is that the creditor is on the land. The creditor is now sitting on the land. If he's sitting on the land, he basically is muhzak in the land. All he's saying now is, lo mistalkana, you're not going to be able to remove me. So what does that mean? It means that I will continue to do what I'm doing now. So if I'm mukzak in the land, I can do what I'm doing now. I have a kinyan on the land because I'm mukzak in it. I'm continuing to do what I do. That's fine. But on the other hand, if the debtor says, I'm going to remove you from the land, what did the debtor do to change the status quo over here? Nothing. The creditor is still mukzak in the land. We're in the middle of a loan. What did the debtor enter now, or how did he lock in what the creditor just offered him? There's no kinyan. There's no chazakah, he's not mukzak in the land. What can the debtor do? So that's what the Gemara wants to know. So Papa Amar lo tzarech to miknaminei. Rav Sheish Shprei David Amar tzarech to miknaminei. He does have to have a kinyan in. Ve'ilchasa l'loche tzarech to miknaminei. You do have to have a kinyan here in order to be machzik or to give status or strength to the loan over here. Now, the Gemara continues. Amar izel v'ayte zuzei lo achil. If he says, I'm going to get the money, he tells him, listen, he has the prepayment option. Says, I'm getting the cash. I have the cash. I'm going to get it to you and I'm going to pay you. Then you have to stop eating at that point because he has the money. Izel b'itrach, I'm going to try to go get the money. I'm going to try to collect all the money and get it together to you. Then Ravina marachil. Ravina says he continued to eat. Marzucha Rabbeinu Maria, lo achil can't eat. Elvis lo achil. Lo achil says that he can't eat because, you know, who knows if he's going to get the money, right? There's no guarantee. He's not saying I have it in hand. He says I have it in hand. I'm just going to pick it up for you. then we say, stop eating, because it's likely that he's buying it back, and it's going to be over. On the other hand, where he says, I'm going to try to go get the money, collect, or get put the money to fence together, then we say, right, is that whenever there's a suffix, we say, don't eat. Right, thank you. I've got a rabbi, all didn't eat binachaita in the fixed reduction, like the statement above, right, Rabbi made Rabbi Yosef, that Tabari Chachami don't do it. Avina, achal binachaita. Right, so Rabbi Yehuda did go ahead and eat binachaita. Oh, so why is he eating binachaita? I mean, well, it's things like Tosas jumps right away. What's going on here? How is Rabbi Yehuda eating binachaita? First of all, assuming the Rabbana doesn't eat binachaita. What's going on over here? So he says, Tame the El, Rabbi Yehuda, the Rabbana, I feel binachaita, no chal. So the Rabbina Tam gives an explanation over here. He didn't want to be classified as a tzumer derabanan. I'm just a regular guy. Usually we don't say that when it's to be mekel. We don't usually say. We say everybody's machmer. To be, you can be machmer with tzumer derabanan when it's a chumra. Right? That's not a big deal. Even everybody can be machmer with tzumer derabanan in that case. Ben Tam said he didn't want to be notel to shame. But nimsa mugab sifrosh Rabbeinu Tam rafifam b'mikom ravina v'puta de kitzuta. Above the machlokas, we saw that Rav Ina and Rav Akbar arguing about kitzuta. So both of them agree that nechaita doesn't work, only in nechaita does it work. At the minimum is that kitzuta works, not nechaita. So Rav Ina is one of those opinions. How could Rav Ina now be eating nechaita if he thinks that possibly it's asur by kitzuta even? Right? How could you do that? Especially it's the second opinion over there. So Rav Ina's had a different gears in his command that was Rav from him. V'yesh b'farshim d'ach nechaita Rav Ina hayu kitzuta. So there are many that read that the word, the nechaita over here is not nechaita, but rather kitzuta. And that makes sense. Why? Because Ravina la Ravina the Kula. So therefore, up above, we'll say that Ravina is the one the Kula in the kitzuta, and therefore it was Shari. And then since he's the one the Kula, he thought he could do kitzuta, that would work fine, then everything would work out nicely.
There's some Ravina that whenever there's machlokes for Ravina and Ravach, it doesn't specify
Whose opinion is the Kula. Right, so that's what the person is bringing over here. Right, so it's Ravina's the Kula, so it'll work well. If you say this Nechaita is Kitzuta, we know Ravina's the Kula, and therefore it'll be Kitzuta and Ravina's Shitato, and he'll be fine. Right, I'm at the Manda Achim Benechaita. What's the reason why when someone eats by reductions? Midav is Steyachuza. It's like the Steyachuza. Steyachuza is when you makdish a field that you own, meaning that's really your property, your avot. You makdish it, then when you buy it back from Hekdesh, for instance, you decide in 5 years you want to buy it back. You buy it back at a fixed amount till the Yovel, right? I mean, how many years are left to the Yovel? You redeem it at a fixed amount, which is, right, 50 shekel for the 50 selah, beit kur, right, for the over the next 50 years. So now, even though every year, right, one consumes fruits on that property, there's many fruits on that property. Nevertheless, the door says kapar klav ba'arba azuze. You take it back for seller per year. Right? One seller per year, two, a little more. It's a little excess of a seller per year because it's over 49 years. But basically, you take it back for a seller per year. Hanami loshna, also over here. As long as you pay it back in a fixed amount, we don't care how much payroll there are per year. We don't look at that. We look at it as a fixed sum per year. So fine, it works. Mandasar, one who says no. Amar lochas de'achuza hekdeshi. The Torah defines how you redeem hekdesh. I mean, it's not a definition of purchasing or value. It's a determination of what is classified as redemption. That's classified. Hacha alvahi. Right here, it's a melve. Umechsek rebeats. And it looks like rebeats. So over here, we're going to tell you pay back the true amount or the true value of the payroll. So you have to right. Is it steachuzah as a definition of how one looks at value, and that's the first opinion. Says the Achuzah tells us how to look at value. You give a fixed value per year. We don't really care about the output of the consumption. That is the value, and that's fine. Where do we say no? Stei Achuzah is an exceptional case. Stei Achuzah is how you redeem from Hekdesh. The Torah, Gzeiras HaKutub, defined that this is the value per year for Stei Achuzah, irrespective of value. And it's not even a value, right, consideration. It's only Pijon. Pijon works this way. You want to talk about value? Value you need to take out and pay for the true amount of what you ate. We can't learn that out from Steyachuzah. Okay, we'll stop over here.